This session, we're going to talk about challenging the process. I was recently doing a conference for about 150 CEOs and presidents of companies. The only people that are allowed in the conferences were leaders of organizations. And during a question and answer period, one of the CEOs from Detroit asked me this question. He said, "John, I have potential leaders in my organization, but sometimes I'm not sure which one has the most potential. How would you discover that?" And I shared with that all the corporate people that day that if they really want to find a leader, I mean, if they really want to find a potential leader, they were going to have to get them out of their corporation. And I said, let your five or six potential leaders go into a volunteer community service project and ask them to lead volunteers. Because I said, you never truly know the potential of your leadership or your giftedness of your leadership until you lead people who don't have to follow. I built a church, and I built businesses. And I can tell you right now, it is 10 times more difficult to build a church than it is to build a business. When you've got a business, you've got, I mean, you may not even be a good leader, but if you've got the paycheck, hello. I mean, they come, let me prove the point. How many of you ever worked for somebody that you didn't like, but you worked for them because they had the paycheck? How many of you brought that person to this conference? Now, you take moving volunteers, that's a challenge in itself as a leader. But then you think about in the church, challenging the process. I mean, the church's theme song is, "I shall not be moved." And then you take that church in the South. Hello. Because when Margaret and I moved to Atlanta, we had to slow down. In fact, we had to put it in reverse. And when we went to churches, the thing that was revered so much was tradition, tradition, tradition. And then we came to North Point. And when we came to North Point, I saw a church that was different. I saw a church that had outreach and influence and salt and light in the community to be a high priority. I saw a church that was willing to be different and take a risk. And it's all because their leader and pastor, Andy Stanley, really understands how to challenge the process. In fact, I could think of nobody better, nobody better. I mean, think about it, a volunteer organization in the South that decides to do church different. You're in for an incredible treat. For when I'm here on Sundays, Margaret and I are in attendance here. Andy Stanley is my pastor, gifted communicator. I've never heard anybody be able to take one sermon and meet the needs of an unchurched community at the same time, feed people who have been walking with God for several years at the very same time, in the very same sermon, like Andy. He's my pastor. He's my friend. But he's going to talk to us now about how we can go back to what we're responsible of leading and challenge the process. Would you give a warm welcome to Andy Stanley in this session?
I tell you what, it's an intimidating thing to be about a third of the way through your sermon, and you look back, and there's John Maxwell. Good grief, what's he doing here? So I finally told John, I said, could you and Margaret sit behind the camera, or at least tell me you're coming? I mean, you grew up and listened to somebody for years and years and years, and they're out there, and they're taking notes, and I'm thinking, what's he writing? I want to stop and say, whoa, what did you write? Or I'll be talking along, and I'll kind of see his head go down, and I want to stop and say, what did I say? You know, what would you write down that you haven't heard anyway? It's a privilege. We're really blessed. If you have your workbooks, I want you to turn to page 10. I put my notes in there, and the reason I did that is in case you have to leave early, you'll at least have basically, because I'm right before lunch, and speaking right before lunch is dangerous because you're looking around going, okay, there's 20-something hundred people in here. And there's how many restaurants and how am I going to get to my car? So I went and put the notes in here in case you're one of those people. Page 10, we're going to talk, as John said, about challenging the process. And I want to jump right into this as quick as possible. So we're going to do some fill in the blank real quick to kind of orient us toward the topic. And Jim obviously did a great job giving us the big picture. But I really believe, as we're going to see in the next few minutes, that leadership begins with challenging the process. In fact, let's just go ahead and fill in some blanks. Number one under introduction, leaders love progress. Leaders love progress, and I have a little quote there a few lines down from Leadership Challenge. It says this, if you can find it. It says, the unique role, see that in your notes? The unique role of the leader is to take us on journeys to places we have never been before. The challenge, of course, is we're taking people on journeys to places we've never been before either. But that's the unique challenge of leadership. And because of that, because that's in you and because of that's in me, we just love progress. I love forward motion, and you love forward motion. Number two, leaders hate the status quo. Isn't that true? I mean, you don't lay in bed at night dreaming about how things are. It's never happened. You lay in bed at night and you, when you're alone, you dream about how things could be and how things should be. But none of us love to dream about just how things are. We can't stand the status quo. There's something about it that just makes us nervous. Number three. Nothing strikes terror in our hearts more than the prospects of being stuck. In fact, some of you are at this conference because you feel stuck. And you're hoping something you hear, something you sing, somebody you're going to meet is going to open a door, open an escape hatch, and allow you to leave where you are. In fact, some of you are praying. You're at this conference praying, God, I am tired of where I am. I'm stuck. The elders don't have any vision. The leadership in the church is poor. We're in an antiquated building. We have antiquated programs, and nobody wants to change. And I'm in my 20s or my 30s, and I'm slowly dying. And I don't want to be stuck anymore. And nothing scares me as a leader, and I know nothing scares you as a leader more than being in an environment, being in an environment of relationships, being in an environment of circumstances and environments where you feel stuck. Because if you're a leader, you'll die there. You'll become cynical. You'll become critical. You'll channel the leadership gifts that God has given you in unhealthy directions. Because leaders were gifted to move forward and to make progress. And when we are in environments where we can't go forward, something on the inside of us begins to rot. Number four. Progress, which we love, progress is always preceded by change. Progress is always preceded by change. And number five, and here's where we're going for a few minutes. Change is always preceded by challenge. That the change that you and I long to see in our ministries and in our homes and in our communities, the change that we dream about, the thing that we wake up at night saying, if only it could be, if only it should be, that kind of change is always preceded by challenge. Where there is no challenge, there is no change. And in any environment where you want to see change and I want to see change, somebody has to stand up and begin the process by challenging the status quo and by challenging the process. It is the job of the leader to challenge the process. And if you're like me, and I know you are, you wouldn't be here. If you're driven by progress, if you're driven by seeing things change, if you love to see things move forward, then part of your responsibility and part of it and part of mine is to always take the lead in challenging the process. Number six, challenging the status quo. It's where leadership begins. And look at the second quote I gave you from the Leadership Challenge. This is great. This is a message all in itself. Leaders must challenge the process precisely because any system, you might want to underline that. Above the word system, you could write church. You could write the word ministry. You could write the word program. You could write the word environment. You could write the word choir. You could write the word deacons meeting. You could write the word elders. You can write many, many words there. Any system will unconsciously, in other words, it's nobody's fault, will unconsciously conspire to maintain the status quo and prevent change. It is the nature of things organizationally not to change in a healthy direction. It is the nature of things organizationally to find a happy place and stay there forever and ever and ever and ever. You're going, sounds like my church, right? Sounds like the leadership in my church. Every single week, at least once a month, but just about every single week, I talk to a pastor who says, What do I do with these elders? What do I do with my leadership? What do I do with my deacons? It's clear in my mind what could be and should be in this organization, and nobody gets it but me, and nobody wants to change. And it's because every organization eventually finds a status quo, unconsciously goes there and works very, very hard to stay there. And that's why I say leadership begins with challenging the status quo. Leadership begins with challenging the process. Now, here's the good news, and you know this. The good news is this is something that you do instinctively. This is not something somebody has to remind you to do. In fact, if you're here today and you feel like, gee, I'm glad he said that because I never thought about that, then you might be at the wrong conference. Because as I get around leaders, and I have the most incredible staff in the world. In fact, you're today and tomorrow, you're seeing the benefits of the kind of staff that I work with. I have a very young staff, and they're leaders. And I've never once had to say, now, does anybody have a new idea? Ted, can anybody think of a way to do something better around here? That's just how leaders think. It is intuitive to you. You are driven and gifted and geared to challenge the process. Roman numeral one, let's talk about that. As a leader, there's something in you that leans toward evaluating and critiquing everything you bump into organizationally. Isn't that true? Illustrations, A. Number one, communicators. If you're here today and you're a preacher, pastor, communicator, you're not simply listening to me. You're listening at me. Aren't you? You're going, that was a pretty good introduction. Now, do you notice the way, and your wife looks at you like, shh, just listen. You're going, no, but did you notice? And the conclusion was kind of weak, and she's going, did you learn anything? Well, I don't know, but I was watching the communication style. You can't help that. That God put that in you. Number two, second illustration. Administrators, you're not simply attending this conference. You're critiquing the conference, aren't you? I mean, you're enjoying it. There's part of your brain that's taking notes and learning. There's another part that's going now. When we went to the leadership summit, you know, man, that was a conference, right? When the team went to Saddleback, and they had a da-da-da-da, the North Point thing and the Catalyst thing, da-da-da. Or, boy, I really like the Catalyst because the other one, you're constantly critiquing. In fact, some of you want to do church growth conferences, and you're not here just to learn. You're here to learn about how to do what you do better in terms of other conferences. It's just in you to do that. At the end of this conference, you'll learn a few things, but some of you will just critique it to death. And that's not because you have a problem. God wired you that way. You are wired to challenge the process. Number three, church planners. You're not simply in the building. You're evaluating the building, right? You walked through the doors. You said, where's the such and such and why is this here? Notice how they did that. Notice how they did this. In fact, some of you couldn't even pay attention the whole first session going, what is that ceiling made out of? I have no idea. What is that stuff? Well, I think it's foam. I don't know if it's black. I wonder if they painted it. Who can I talk to about what's it? See, but let me just encourage you. You're not sick. You're not demented. God made you that way. You can't help it. And surely at times you drive the people around you crazy, but I hope if anything else at the end of this session, you'll be free to allow that thing in you that God put in you to challenge the process, to just set it free. Let it go. And let God use that to lead you to places you've never been and to take a whole lot of folks with you. It is intuitive to leaders, mentally, if not verbally, mentally, to challenge the process. Letter B, it is in you to challenge the process. And I would add to that, if I were redoing these notes, this, listen carefully, that anybody that comes along and tries to shut that down in you, anybody that comes along and says, you need to quit thinking that way, you need to quit talking that way, you need to quit being so critical, you need to quit evaluating everything, anybody that comes along and tries to shut that down, one of two things is true. They're either trying to control you or they don't have the first clue about leadership. They're either trying to control you because they've got a plan and they're sick and tired of you critiquing their plan, and I can relate to that, we all can. They're either trying to control you and they're trying to shut down something in you that God put in you, or they just don't understand leadership. Because God put that in you. The question for me and the question for you is, what are we going to do with it? How do you harness that? How do you use that thing and yet stay out of trouble with your superiors and those that God has placed in authority over you? We're going to talk about that. Letter C. And let's just be honest about this. Deep in your heart, you feel that if you were in charge, things would not only be different, they'd be better. I got some good news. Now, first of all, how many of you in your organization, and maybe your senior pastor's here, and you kind of want to do this, but how many in you, my staff, you just go ahead and raise your hands. If you, have times it felt like, if I were the pastor here, or if I were the senior youth minister here, or if I were in charge of the education program, or if I were the president of this company, you've had feelings, not only things would be different, I think I could do a better job. You ever had that feeling? No, a bunch of liars. Yeah, the front row is all telling the truth. I got some good news. Let me tell you what. That is not a problem of arrogance. That's not pride. That's the way God wired you. You just think that way. It's a good thing. And again, the question is, as a Christian and as a leader and as men and women who are committed to seeing the local church advance and make progress and change, what do we do with that? For some of you, it's gotten you into terrible trouble. Some of you have lost jobs because you challenged the process and challenged the process and challenged the process, and finally the powers that be said, go do that somewhere else. We like it the way it is. Others of you feel completely squelched and squashed where you are because there's no opportunity to say what's in your mind and say what's in your heart. And you believe if only they would listen, if only they would implement one of my ideas, things could be so different here. And yet there's no opportunity. There's no license to be who God's made you to be. Letter D. This propensity explains several things. It explains why you ask why about everything. It explains why you have an opinion about everything. It explains why you're always offering unsolicited suggestions. It explains why you're constantly pointing to other models. And your advisors and supervisors and senior pastors and board of elders, they hate that. And the reason they do, it's not their problem. It's because, remember, everything settles into an element of equilibrium where everything's just fine. It's fine the way it is. Why rock the boat? Why change? Why talk about Willow Creek? And why talk about Saddleback? And why keep giving me John Maxwell books? Just leave me alone, okay? I'm fine. The church is fine. I mean, we've got some problems, but why do you keep wanting to change everything? The answer is simple. Because God wired you that way. You're a leader. That's what leaders do. That's how leaders think. That's what leaders feel. E. When you stop challenging the process, this is just my opinion. I think you've stopped leading and you've begun managing. When you stop challenging the process, and I want to talk about that for a minute before we go on. You've stopped leading and you've begun managing. And let me just share with you, managing is not bad. And managers have certainly gotten a bad rap in the leadership culture. And those of us who are leaders would be nowhere without managers. Here's the problem. If God has designed you to lead, you have no business managing. And if God has gifted you to lead, and because you've led your organization to a place to where you like it the way it is, and this is the temptation for me constantly. You finally like it the way it is. Everybody's doing what they're supposed to do, and all the T's are crossed, and all the I's are dotted. And we finally got it the way we want it. If you ever stop challenging the process, you have abdicated your authority as a leader, and you've abdicated your responsibility before God because He's gifted you to lead, and that always means challenging the process. Let's push it forward. Let's push it forward. Let's push it forward. Let's make it better. Let's make it more relevant. Let's make it more effective. Let's never settle into something we just like. And boy, as I was preparing for the lesson, this really was a challenge to me. Because 6 years ago when we started the church, I was all about challenge the process because I didn't like anything that we had come out of. And 2 or 3 years into it, I was all about challenge the process because we were trying to train leaders to think differently about groups and education and children and music and everything else. But hey, we've arrived. 6 years later, the buildings are built. The programs are in place. People say, teach us, teach us, teach us. Oh, we want to do what you do. How open do you think I am now to challenging the process? I like the processes the way they are. And here's the challenge as a leader. It's not only a challenge as you deal with authorities that may not go along with your ideas. It's always a challenge because one day God will bless you with an environment that maybe you've created. And maybe you'll be the senior pastor. Maybe you'll be over the department. Maybe you'll be the administrator. Maybe you'll be the president. And maybe one day things will be just the way you've always wanted them. And then the challenge will be this. Will you continue
to allow God to raise up in you that thing he put in you when you were young? Will you continue to push and push and push and push? And for those of you in ministry, will you continue to push and plan and progress for the sake of God's kingdom? Do you know why many of you are in churches that are stuck? It's because a long time ago, leaders like you quit challenging the process. They got it just the way they wanted it. They got it just the way people liked it. The buildings were built and the crowd was there and the teachers were in place and everybody liked the music. So let's don't mess with the formula because it's working. And a generation later, it's killing you and it's killing the church. You see, leadership, and in leadership, we must never, ever, 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 ever become part of the system that says, let's just leave it alone. Because God has gifted us and charged us with the responsibility of challenge the process. Let's keep going. Roman numeral 2. Challenging the process is often interpreted, and this is no new news, right? Challenging the process is often interpreted as a challenge to someone's leadership and authority, right? That's why you're in trouble all the time. Because whenever you come up with a new idea or a new game plan or a new strategy or a new conference or a new book or a new twist or a new music or new anything, somebody feels threatened. Challenging the process is often interpreted as a challenge to someone's leadership and authority. A, your supervisor may confuse this tendency as arrogance or a lack of respect. Why? Number one, because if you challenge my idea, I feel challenged. If you challenge my vision, I feel challenged. If you challenge the way I've been doing things, I feel challenged. And we say in our hearts and our minds as leaders, wait a minute, it's not personal, but wait a minute. If it was my idea and you're challenging the idea which was my idea, I feel challenged. And if you're challenging the strategy and the program that was my idea, then I feel challenged. And there's no way to challenge the process within an organization without encroaching upon someone else's authority. There's no way to challenge the process in an organization without potentially hurting somebody's feelings and alienating people. Isn't that true? And yet at the same time, we dare not shut down because God put it in us to challenge the process. And therein lies the leadership tension. Whether you have authority as a board, you're a senior pastor, or you're a multi-staff church and you're three or four levels away from the top. There's always that tension. How do I do the thing God has gifted me and called me to do and at the same time respect the authority he has placed over me? And of course, there are two extremes. One extreme is to shut down. If you shut down, you die. The other extreme is to rebel, and if you rebel, you're out. So again, what do you do with this thing that God has put in you, called you to exercise? Letter B, keep in mind, and this is very difficult for those of us who are young leaders, keep in mind that everything that is in place was originally considered a good idea. That is very hard to imagine, isn't it? I mean, there are some things that go on in your church and you look at them and you go, you know, who came up with it? And then you're thinking there was a board meeting and somebody said, let's start XYZ. And people went, oh, that's a great idea. You can't even imagine why it was a great idea. And yet people are willing to die for it. The other day in a staff meeting, we finally discovered where church robes, choir robes came from. I've never known. I just thought it was silly when men put on robes and they stood up there. And they just always, as a child, it was just silly. And you thought, you know, when you're a child, you always wonder, are they wearing anything under those robes? That's the first thing that goes through your mind. And the other day, we have a choir here. You'll hear them tomorrow. In fact, it's just unbelievable what they're going to do. I don't want to tell you. But we have this great choir. But we don't have choir robes. People just wear their normal clothes. But we found out the other day why choir robes were a good idea. Maybe there's history behind this. It's just our observation. We were talking about how do you explain to certain women what's appropriate, not appropriate. You ever have that problem with your worship team? Especially when the stage is way up here and the guys are sitting right down there. And she looks in the mirror and looking down, the skirt looks like it goes to here. And then when you're sitting down there, it's just different. So... So we're having this discussion. How do we explain to the girls in the worship team and the ladies in the choir how to dress appropriate? One of our staff guys go, choir robes. And we thought, aha, maybe it is a good idea. We've kind of gone full circle and discovered why that. But the point is, everything that happens in your organization, we're not going to have choir robes. Everything Everything in your organization, in your church, was somebody's good idea. And when you begin to express this thing that God has put in you to challenge the process, immediately you're stepping on people's toes. Second one, everything that's in place was originally, the first one was considered a good idea. The second one was somebody's good idea. I tell you the one I struggle with the most is, and maybe you know the history behind this, what's with putting the big throne chairs up on the platform for the preacher and the music director to sit on? Where did that come from? I mean, I grew up with that. Every single Southern Baptist church, there's the big chair, then there's a little one, like, you know, you're important, you're more important than the people in the pew, but you're not quite as important as the guy in the big chair, and there's two big chairs because they're equal. But the thing is, somewhere back in time, there was a dilemma, and some brilliant person, leader under 40, said, I think we need to put four big old chairs on the platform. People said, no, that's terrible. And he challenged the process, and there was a breakthrough, and it swept the country, and all over the world, there are chairs on the platform. The majority of people decided that was a good idea. I don't know my church history. There's a story behind that. And now you go to church and you look at them and go, why don't they just sit down here with the rest of us? Third one. Everything that's in place was once viewed as revolutionary. Now that's almost, again, it's impossible to imagine. But I remember in the, I guess, early 70s when we first came to Atlanta, my daddy was pastor of First Baptist Atlanta and decided we're going to have an orchestra. Oh, I mean, you know, that would mean like drums all, you know, it was like Battlestar Galactica to bring an orchestra. We're not talking about this, an orchestra. And some of you are old enough to remember, that was revolutionary to put an orchestra in church. Now we look at an orchestra in church, go get a band, you know, it's much simpler. But I remember, John remembers, bringing an orchestra into the church. This was revolutionary. I mean, my dad had to, I remember he preached a sermon, two sermons, one on the orchestra. Then he had to preach a sermon on clapping. Why it was okay to clap in church. I'm telling you, it was revolutionary to clap in church. And I remember as a kid, it was so funny. The sermon went, okay, we're going to clap on Sunday night, but we won't clap on Sunday morning. You remember that? Yeah. And the thing is, we look back now and go, what was the big deal? It was a big deal. I mean, he was leading a huge charge to, you know, open people up and free people to clap in church. The only people that clapped in church were the charismatics. If you clap in church, next thing you know, you'll raise a hand and you'll be speaking in tongues, so we're going to stop it. We won't clap in church, right? Because one thing leads to another. Here's the only thing I want you to draw from this, is simply this. As leaders, as God calls us to challenge the process, we just have to go into it with this in mind. Every process, every architectural design, every, you know, layout of a building, every program, everything began as somebody's revolutionary idea that was instituted to solve a problem, and people thought, you know, people died over those issues. I mean, people split church over the things that we're trying to get rid of now. All I'm saying is this. As leaders, we have to go into the process of challenging the process, sensitive to things, to where those things came from, and also one day people are going to be laughing at us the same way. Remember that dumb Callous conference? I had like parachute things up there. Oh, gosh, what were we thinking, you know? How this rock music, you know. It's going to happen, right? And as leaders, we are arrogant and we are ignorant to move into this difficult battleground of bringing about change without sensitivity to those things. Everything in your current environment was somebody's good idea, and they paid dearly in many cases to implement it, even though from our perspective and from your generation's perspective, it makes absolutely no sense at all. The last one, everything that's in place began as a challenge to the status quo. To complicate matters, let her see, in every organization, there is someone standing guard over the status quo. I mean, they may not guard the front door of the building, But there is an unspoken, ethereal, intangible thing going on in your church. And when you bump into it, all the guards come up out of the floor, right, and out of the ceiling. And there are just things, they're standing guard over the status quo. Now listen real carefully to this, and we're going to talk about some solutions, because this is where we're insensitive sometimes as leaders. Listen. Whenever your spiritual gift, leadership, whenever any spiritual gift, in your case, whenever the spiritual gift causes a relational rift, it is never the fault of the gift, always the gifted. When my leadership gift causes a relational rift, I cannot blame it on the gift. It's always the person that is gifted. So as God moves and as the Holy Spirit moves in you to begin challenging or to continue challenging processes, you just remember this. As you watch the process begin to tear at the seams of relationship, you just remember, you cannot blame the gift. It's always the gifted that are a part of that kind of tension. So once again, with all that in mind, what do you do? How do you challenge the process without challenging authority? How do you challenge the process and not lose your job? How do you challenge the process and yet stay enough in sync with the people who are following you that they can continue to follow and that you don't get so far ahead that nobody can keep up? How do you challenge the process and bring about change so that there can be progress, which is the thing that fuels us as leaders? Let's talk about that a little bit. Roman numeral 3 application. As a follower, I want to give you 5 suggestions. And there are way more than this, just 5 things to get you thinking. As a follower, develop the art of challenging the process without challenging the authority of your leader. And again, your leader could be your pastor, your board, your elders, whoever it is. Everybody who has authority is under some authority. Number 1, when an instruction is given, follow through now, debrief later. When an instruction is given, I mean, when the discussion's over and somebody looks at you and they're clearly the authority that God has placed over you and they say, this is what we're going to do, then you do it. You follow through now and you debrief later. The way we do that in our home is I've taught my kids, I've said, you know, Andrew and Garrett, we got to deal with this. On one hand, I want you to be able to ask questions in our home. I don't want you to grow up and say, well, why'd you do that? Because my daddy told me. We don't want to do that. At the same time, I don't want to have a 10-minute discussion over everything I ask you to do, right? Your parents, you understand, my kids are 9, 7, and 5. So we taught them to say this. They say, yes, sir, daddy. Why? In other words, I want to hear from you, my kids. I want to know that you're committed to obedience. And then we can talk about anything you want to. It's not why. It's yes, sir, daddy. Why? Yes, sir, mommy. Why? In other words, I want them to learn, as we need to learn, to express the fact I am clearly and squarely on your team and under your authority. But could we talk? I'm not asking why in order to do something different. I just want to understand. And therein is that tension. And in your own style, in your own way, you must learn to communicate both. I am on your team. I am under your authority. Can we talk about it? Not to do anything different necessarily. I just want to understand, and I want you to understand. Yes, sir, daddy. Why? Number 2, never verbalize your frustration with the process in front of other team members. Never verbalize your frustration with the process in front of other team members. Let me tell you an incredible principle. I'm a senior pastor and I'm a boss now, and I got like 100 and something staff, and as I'm speaking from that vantage point, this is so true. Principle: loyalty publicly results in leverage privately. Loyalty publicly results in leverage privately. If you want to have leverage one-on-one with me, then when we're in front of the team, you show support to my ideas and my strategies, even if you think they're absolutely off the wall. But if you want to lose leverage with me as a boss, then disrupt and ask bad questions and show, you know, division among the ranks, you know, publicly. In other words, challenge me publicly, and you're not going to have much leverage with me privately. But you support me publicly, then come in one-on-one and say, I want you to know, I led the team and we did the deal, but that was the dumbest idea I ever heard in my life. I'm going to listen. Publicly support, privately challenge. You reverse those two things and you've abdicated your authority as a leader with your leaders. It's okay to think different. It's okay to challenge. But how you do it and where you do it is so critical because, again, everybody in this room that has authority is under authority. You cannot have authority and not be under authority. We'll talk about that in a minute. So consequently, we have to learn to walk that tightrope, not of shutting down the challenge, but at the same time, not challenging in the wrong way and lose our leverage with those that we want to influence and with those we want to bring about change and progress. Number three, this is huge. Don't confuse your insights with moral imperatives. Let me explain what I mean by that. You see, you're the smartest person in your church, right? I mean, nobody has more insight in how ministry should be done. Not only do you think, you know, you're the youth pastor, not only do you understand youth ministry, you understand children's ministry better than the children's director. You understand youth choir better than the youth choir director. You can, you know, you understand how to, you're convinced that, you know, you're the end all and you've got all the good ideas. I'm playing this out to the extreme for a purpose. Now listen carefully. And so suddenly, or all of a sudden, you know, there's a meeting and your pastor or the board asks you to do something, and they just, and you just think, this is just the wrong approach. That's not the way to reach students. That's not the way to deal with choir. That's not the way to lead worship. That's not the way to structure the evangelism program, whatever it is. And you are just absolutely sure your way is better. It's more relevant. It's more effective. It's cooler. It'll be more fun. It's cheaper, and you're going to reach more lost people. I mean, your way is clearly superior to their way. Listen carefully. Even if you're sure of that, it is not a moral imperative. In other words, if you don't do it your way, you haven't sinned. But as leaders, as leaders, we cross this line and we never know it to where we think, I feel so compelled by God to do what God has called me to do. I'm going to rebel against the authority. I'm going to work outside the lines of authority because after all, this is what God has called me to do. And we're talking about people's eternity. Now listen, there's something more important than doing ministry the most relevant, cool, effective way. That is learning to live and lead under the authority that God has placed over you. Your awesome ideas, your ideas that you're sure will work, are not moral imperatives. You have not sinned by doing ministry ineffectively. You have not sinned by simply taking the marching orders from somebody who's not as smart as you and doing things that aren't as effective as you would do. That is not a sin. But as leaders sometimes, especially if you're really geared up and passionate about an area of ministry, there's always the temptation to justify just flat-out rebellion for the sake of the mission and the cause. You've got to remember, your great ideas are not moral imperatives. And God, and this is hard, I know, and I'm telling you, I'll go ahead and tell you so you don't have to say it to me later. It is easier for me to say this than it would have been if I were in your situation. I'll acknowledge that. God has you where he has you for a purpose. And on one hand, you can't shut down as a leader. At the other hand, you can't work against the authority God has placed over you because God is using you where you are, not just to do ministry, but to prepare you for whatever else he has for you. And learning to challenge the process while staying under authority is part of the lesson, and it's not a waste of time. And if you never see your ideas implemented, but at the end of the day, you've done everything you can to challenge and stay under the authority that God has placed over you, you've had a good day as a leader. And you've taken a step in preparation for whatever it is that God has for you in the future. Let's keep going. Number four goes right along with it. If you don't learn to lead under, you probably won't have as many opportunities to lead over. If you don't learn to lead under authority, you'll never have as many opportunities to lead over. One of my favorite little stories in the life of Jesus, and this is such a fascinating little interchange. Remember that when the centurion came to Jesus, the centurion's servant was sick, and he came to Jesus. He'd been watching Jesus, apparently. He'd seen him do miracles and heal people, and he'd seen him do all these powerful things. And the centurion doesn't walk up and say, Jesus, clearly you're in charge. Clearly you are an authority. Would you come heal my servant who's sick? Remember what he says? He says, I've been watching, and clearly you are a man who is, what? Under authority. And that was a brilliant insight. I mean, you would think he would have said, clearly, you are an authority. You can speak to demons and demons leave. You can speak to illness and illness goes away. Clearly, you are an authority. No, he had more insight than that. He said, clearly, you are a man who is under authority. How do you know that? Because you have so much authority. And he said, the reason I know is because I can stand up in front of 100 men and say, stand there and die, and they obey me. Not because of me, but because I represent Rome. And because I'm under Rome's authority, I have authority. And to do what you do, Jesus, clearly, you are a man under authority. And he illustrates such an incredible principle for us, those of us who are leaders. that to have authority, you've got to be under authority, because every authority is under authority. And one of the things that God is training you and preparing you for later in life is to have greater authority. So consequently, you're caught in the dilemma. I've got to challenge the process and work with the authorities that God has placed over me. And that's why you dare not, intentionally or unintentionally, rebel against the ones that God has placed over you. At the same time, you dare not shut down as a leader in terms of challenging the process. You say, well, Andy, I feel hemmed in. Exactly. And it's in that tension that God will prepare you for whatever he has for you in the future. It's part of your training as a leader. Let's keep going. Number five, when you can't follow, that is when you've challenged and challenged and you just can't bear to stay in the environment any longer, then you get off the team. Probably the question I get asked by you know, more young leaders than any other question is, Andy, how do I know when it's time to go? How do I know? Because I've challenged and I've pushed and I've lobbied for change. I've done everything I can to bring about change. And I've done my best to stay under authority. And I just feel like I'm dying on the inside. And I don't have a simple answer to that question, but I know this. As a leader, eventually the time will probably come when God's going to lead you to leave the team. And you don't bring up, you don't cause dissension before you leave, and you don't stay so long as to get so cynical and critical that you cause problems before you leave. But when you just can't follow any longer, there comes a time to get off the team. And don't allow your frustration to lead you, and don't allow your anger to lead you. You allow God to lead you in his time to do whatever else he has for you. Now here's a challenge to those of you who are the bosses, the senior pastors. Letter B, as a leader, in other words, as a leader, if you're like me, you're a leader and you've got people who work under you or for you who are leaders. What do I do as a leader to identify the fact that it is in them to challenge the process just as it is in me to challenge the process? Number one, you don't, or read letter B, create opportunities for those who report to you to challenge the process. Number one, you don't gain anything by not knowing what they're already thinking. In other words, let me just clue you in on something. If you're a leader and leaders work for you, they think they can do a better job than you. They just do, just like you do. And that's not wrong, that's just leadership. If you have leaders who work for you, I guarantee you mentally, they are challenging the processes you have put in place. They're doing it all the time. You might as well know what they're thinking because they're going to think it anyway. Number two, don't confuse an expression of leadership with rebellion. Oh, this happens all the time. To where somebody works with you or is on your team and they're a leader and maybe they're a little bit younger and they've got all this energy and they're always having new ideas, always coming up with new strategies and books and tapes and conferences. And there's a tendency to think, wait a minute, if you've got all these new ideas, clearly you're not on my team. Not necessarily. They're leaders and they're younger than you are. And they're not sure what to do with this thing that God has put inside them. Don't confuse leadership for rebellion. Number three. If our leaders have permission to challenge the process, this is huge. Everybody wins. The organization remains relevant. If you want your organization to remain relevant or you want your church to be relevant, then you've got to create an avenue or a tool for the leaders in your organization to be able to challenge the process safely. You've got to know what they're thinking because the next generation of leaders, I mean, from my perspective, maybe from John's perspective, this is the next generation. But the generation behind you is going to do it differently. Hello, right? You might as well know what it is. The only way for me to stay relevant is to listen to you. The only way for you to stay relevant is to listen to them. And we must create that kind of capacity in our organizations. Otherwise, we become irrelevant. The reason you're in organizations and churches that are irrelevant from your perspective is because nobody listened. There was no way to get those ideas to the top. There was no way to experiment. There was no way to pilot new ministries. Things were just going to be the way things always had been. So as a leader, it's incumbent upon me and it's incumbent upon you to learn to listen to those who are challenging our processes, our ideas, our breakthrough strategies, our styles of ministry, even our styles, communication. The third bullet point, we create an environment that attracts leaders. Isn't that what you want to do? You create an environment where leaders can't challenge the process, they will go away. The last bullet point, You let them challenge the process, nothing goes underground. I'll tell you what I did to apply this in my own life. Every year, I take a segment of our staff and I mentor them or disciple them. And there's usually about 7 or 8 guys in the group. And I've done this for 3 years. And so we meet once a month. And these are just people in all different elements of our staff. It doesn't matter what level they are, who they work for. I just get a group who I haven't spent time with. And I just spend, you know, about 2.5 hours once a month. And I always give them an assignment. Here's my last assignment I give them. This is my most fun. Here's what it is. Anywhere in the organization. Imagine that you are now the senior pastor of North Point Community Church. Fortunately, you don't have to preach every week. Your responsibility is to lead the church and the church staff, and then I ask them to answer these 8 questions. List 3 things that you would continue doing as a leader that you see me doing right now. What would you change immediately? Now, when I read that question to them, they kind of look around the room like, are you going to be honest? I'm not. You go first. I'm not about to answer that question. Hey, you know what? They know this. My staff know this. You know what? Listen. There are people on our staff that are far more capable leaders than me. There are people on our staff that have better ideas than me. What good does it do me not to know? They're going to think it anyway. They're going to talk about it anyway. They're going to dream about it anyway. They're going to challenge the process anyway. How stupid of me to shut down that discussion and not know. I have dated myself when I shut down a leader on this organization's ability to challenge the process. 3, what would you change about the structure of the leadership? How would you handle Monday morning prayer time differently? What would you struggle with the most? What would you fear the most? And get this one. This is another one. Everybody pauses. Among our current staff, who would you have the most difficult time leading? Why? And they always say, do you want us to be honest? And you know what I always say? I say, you know what? I already know who you'd have the most difficult time leading. Let's talk about why. You see, I've just learned a long time ago, the smartest thing I can do as a leader, and one of the smartest things you can do as a leader, is to allow the leaders around you to express what's been in you all this time anyway. Give them an opportunity to challenge the process and teach them to do it and work under authority, and everybody wins it. If you don't, you will not have leaders in your organization for long. They will come and they will go. They will come and they will go. They will come and they will go. And you will cap your leadership quotient because you don't allow them to express who they are. And one of the best things you can do for your church, your organization, or your business is to create an environment where the leaders around you can do what you've been doing for years. Challenge the process. Now, let me shut your book. I just want to tell you why I was so happy to be asked to talk about this and why I'm so passionate about this. Here's the deal. You listen up and I'll be finished. The church... Good grief. The church needs to change. Right? That's why you're here. And it's not anybody's fault. The church is exactly where it has been led to be. The church has got to change. The church has got to make progress. If we're going to see people come into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ, the local church has got to partner with the people that are doing that. And if the local church isn't a partner, then we're wasting a whole lot of time and money doing something. Right? That's why you're here. I know I'm speaking to the choir. If the church is going to make progress and if the church has got to change, then somebody's got to challenge the process. And the reason I'm so passionate is because, listen, you are the generation. You are the generation that has the opportunity and I think the obligation to challenge the process as it stands to deliver the next generation church healthy and whole and vibrant and on mission. That's your responsibility and that's your opportunity. And it begins with challenging the process. And the thing that should encourage you is this. The same Spirit of God dwells in you. It dwelt in Moses when he walked into Pharaoh and said, hey, we're going to do it different. They're leaving. You're going to have to find another workforce. This process is coming to a close. Remember that? It's the same Spirit that dwells in you that was in David when he said, Saul, I don't need any armor. We're doing it different this time. I don't need your spear and your sword. And he walked out and said to Goliath, you come to me with a sword and a spear and a shield, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of God, the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel who you defied. And this day I'm going to strike you down, take your head from you and remove and da-da-da-da-da-da. That's what I'm going to do. I don't need any armor. It's a different day. We're doing it different. Listen, it's the same Spirit of God. It's the same Spirit of God. Get this. Who dwelt, the Lord Jesus Christ, when he walked into the temple and said, we're not doing it this way anymore. clean this stuff out of here. Then one night he sat down with his disciples. And he said, you know, all along you've been eating this bread and drinking this wine and thinking about a bunch of dusty Israelites marching out of Egypt. No more. It's a new day. It's a new covenant. And then one day the Apostle Paul, filled with the same spirit you and I are filled with, sat down at the Jerusalem council. He said, guys, the gospel goes to the Gentiles. It is not just a Jewish thing. And all the rest of the disciples said, rah, rah. He said, well, I'll tell you what. You can stay here in Jerusalem the rest of your life and rot, but I'll go take on the rest of the world. Hey, let's divide up the world. You 11 take Jerusalem. I'll take everything else. And he challenged the process. And here we are, men and women. All I want to say is this. The same Holy Spirit who indwelt those men and women to do incredible things and to bring about change, it indwells you and it indwells me. I don't have to tell you to challenge the process. You do it mentally all the time. What I want to do is set you free and let you know you're not a rebel. You don't have a personality disorder. You don't have a problem. You're not critical. You're not, you know, anal retentive. You know what? God, listen. God has put it in you. And the challenge as a leader is to go into the environments where God has put you and under the authority he's placed over you, challenge the process and challenge the process and challenge the process. And let's deliver to the next generation a church that is on target, on fire, filled with the Holy Spirit and doing the thing that God has called us and gifted us to do. Would you bow your head and close your eyes with me in prayer for just a moment? With your heads bowed and your eyes closed, I just want to ask you a couple questions real quick and we're done. First, the hard one. Have you challenged the process beyond the boundaries of character? In other words, do you owe somebody an apology back home? Your intentions were good, even your ideas were right, but you took it as a moral imperative and went too far. You need to deal with that. The other extreme, are here today and you've been shut down. You become cynical and critical. You just quit trying. You weren't even going to say anything anymore. You weren't going to raise your hand in any more meetings. You weren't going to send any more memos. You weren't going to share any more books and tapes. You just shut down. God's saying, hey, I didn't gift you to do that. Come out wherever you are. And even if you never see change, don't you allow what I've put in you to die. It's there for a purpose. Wherever you are on that continuum, my prayer is that when you leave here and leave this conference, you'll understand that God has given us, he's granted us the stewardship of the church. And we dare not back down as leaders from what he's called us to do. The church needs to change. Change always is preceded by challenge. Heavenly Father, please, please, please ignite a fire in our hearts. Find that tender, special, sensitive place between rebellion and apathy. And give us the courage to keep raising our hand and asking those questions. And give us the courage to do what we don't think is the best way in order to stay under your authority. Help us to find that sweet spot and to stay there and to lead from there. Then, Heavenly Father, when the time is right, I pray that you'd open doors, that you'd open escape hatches, and you would set this group of leaders free and put them in environments such as I'm in and feel so blessed to be in, where we can just do the things that are relevant, and do the things that matter, and do the things that impact lives. Father, just set them free to lead. And in the meantime, prepare them for that day. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks for letting me speak to you guys this morning.